You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Mina Kimes, J.A. Adande, Pablo Astore, Bill Barnwell. The news on Zion Williamson out. For play-in number two, Pelicans, really? How Golden State went out, cooked by Sacramento. Heat Sixers tonight, who to trust more? And the NBA gambling bombshell, lifetime ban for Jontay Porter. Let's go around the horn.
That's a lot. What's going on?
NBA playoff time.
Good excitement. First order of business, mute. For a panel, for yesterday's panel. They had no respect for the Sacramento Kings. No one saw the Keegan-Murray game coming. You get their punishment. They worked Golden State. Golden State got work. The way they go out, some amulet. Steph Curry, 22 points. Klay Thompson, over. There was a shot captured of Thompson leaving Sacramento's home court. Looking around the arena, taking it all in. Could it be his last game for Golden State? Steve Kerr after the game, quote, we need Klay back. There's a question of retool, rebuild. Has the sun set on the Golden State Empire? J.A. Adande, around the horn to you.
Well, we can all agree now that it's over, right? There's no need to delude anyone.
Steve Kerr doesn't agree with you.
To delude themselves. But when they get in the meetings, never believe anything anyone says right in the aftermath of their season ending, right?
Okay. All right.
Anything. But, you know, think about how long it's been. I was thinking, okay, when these Warriors first came to prominence in 2015, their opponents were like James Harden and Dwight Howard on the Rockets, or the grit and grind Grizzlies, right? And then facing LeBron and Kyrie and the Cavaliers. Like, those are so many teams ago, or so many of those players are now out of the league at this point. It's a completely different era. It's remarkable that they lasted this long. But if you think about it, they really didn't stick together that long. After Klay suffered that injury in the 2019 NBA Finals, since then, Klay, Draymond Green, and Steph Curry have only started 80 games together. And all those seasons since then, they basically only played one season together because of injuries to the various part or suspensions from Draymond Green. So it really hasn't been the same for a long time. That 2022 championship will stick out. Otherwise, they've missed the playoffs in three out of the last 5 years. No core that has that attached to it gets to stay together.
Oh, this is simple for Adande. Blow it up. Pablo Torre, around the horn to you.
Yeah, I don't expect them to say anything that their fan base wants them to say right in that moment. I think there are two jobs you have to do, right? Of course, you pay attention to what is our fan base, our audience, the angry people who want more from us, what do they expect? But then there's how are we talking to ourselves? And so there is no reason why Steve Kerr, he should say anything but totally supportive things about Klay Thompson, why Steph Curry, even more importantly, I would say, should do the same thing. If you're heading into an offseason where you're contemplating, do we cut these guys loose? You gain nothing by saying, we need to cut these guys loose right now. The question, though, really is, what should Steph Curry want secretly in his heart of hearts? And what he's telling everybody is, I cannot imagine winning without Draymond Green and Klay Thompson. And this is where I have to argue with Steph, if he believes it, because the notion of like, okay, in the NBA, there's a treadmill of mediocrity, right? You know that you should be better, but you're not. And so you're constantly just treading water, doing the same thing over and over again. The Warriors have a treadmill of nostalgia problem. They are not good enough with these three guys, but they've won so much that they can't cut loose the phantom limb of their memory that says, we can still do this thing. And so I agree with J.A. I just don't think it's good strategy to say any of that out loud right in the moment of great pain.
Treadmill of nostalgia. Sounds like an album by OK Go. Bill Barnwell, around the horn to you.
Who could have seen an OK Go reference coming this early in the show? It's not just
to me. It was a hard pull,
me,
honestly. I had to remember who that was.
It's not just to me that the Warriors lost, but how they lost yesterday. It was the big three that dragged them down. The Warriors lost because Steph Curry turned the ball over six times. They were a mess and sloppy in their half-court offense. Klay Thompson goes 0 for 10, had never gone more than 0 for 2 in a game before with an 0 for, goes 0 for 10 from the field. Draymond getting called out by the commentary team on defense. This is a team that their ownership has already come out and said, we don't want to be a tax team next year. They spent over nearly $400 million on this roster and didn't even get to the postseason. There are major, major issues with this roster. And I think realistically, we saw that in a game, a must-win game, where they needed their vets, their stars to be those guys from the past, they didn't even come close. They looked listless in an embarrassing defeat. Mm-hmm.
Mina Kimes, around the horn to you. First move, Golden State, this offseason.
Yeah. Well, here's a question I would pose. For Klay to leave the Warriors, wouldn't another team have to outbid them? And do any of us actually see another team doing that? Would we recommend it? I know he was better in the second half of the season, but now you're coming off of the second straight year where he puts up a dud in an elimination game, and I think everyone sees where his career is trending. To be honest, more likely than not, I kind of think they run it back. That doesn't mean the dynasty isn't over. I think it is clearly over in terms of the dominance. But as far as the players, I wouldn't be surprised if Klay does return on a relatively cheap contract, given how he's probably viewed around the league. What's key for the Warriors is that if he does return, it is in a bench role, and that they find a way to inject some youth and athleticism into that front court, because that was a very glaring issue last night against a Kings team that, can I give them some credit, did show
quite a bit of fight
against this Warriors squad. I mean, you talked about Keegan Murray. How about Keon Ellis and his defense forcing all of those turnovers? Ultimately, they got 25 second chance points compared to the Warriors 9, and that proved to be a big part of why they won.
Yeah, you guys, you can talk about the Sacramento Kings. It's okay. I recognize that seeding they had did not match up with what their expectation was this year, and the loss of Monk made them a different team. Adonde, I'll give you the last word after the horn.
Well, Mina, just like with Klay, I don't know how the bidders, I don't know how many teams would be willing to trade for Draymond Green's contract at this site. And to Bill's point, yes, I think if I'm ownership, the priority now is shedding salary, which is not going to be conducive to competing for another championship.
Yeah, the sad reality, the reason why this is hard is because those two guys, Klay and Draymond, mean more to the Warriors than they do to anybody else. Not just emotionally, but because they fit in a system where they actually could ostensibly still benefit, right? Like, the VORP on those guys is still higher for the Warriors than it is for other teams, and that's the catch-22.
I'm like, seeing Adonde shake his head no. Mina shaking her head no.
It's the nostalgia over replacement more than a value over replacement.
The panel agrees with you. It's some virtual insanity from
VORP.
From Tori there. Right, another treadmill of mediocrity. The virtual, yes. Jamiroquai, right? The
great. Jamiroquai.
Okay. Yes.
Now, I'm going really far back now. We'll move on.
Always.
Lakers over the Pelicans. Look at the smile on LeBron's face. Whoever came up with the play-in should get a promotion. That's what he's thinking. Or maybe not. Lakers say they want all the smoke from the Nuggets. They're not ducking no fades. But for New Orleans, it's the news of the day on the court in the NBA. Zion Williamson is now not going to be able to play in play-in number two Friday versus Sacramento. The imaging back on his hamstring not looking great. So 40-point game, the game people pleaded for Zion versus the Lakers, but couldn't play the last few minutes. And now it's all bad for New Orleans. Pablo Torre, you'd like to start with the Pelicans side of this or the Lakers?
You got to start with the Pelicans, Tony. The fact that we saw Zion Williamson have the greatest game of his career. And it was also the greatest encapsulation of all that is torturous about Zion Williamson's career. And so it was so bad. It was so mysterious, actually, him leaving. By the way, 40 points in 36 minutes. It turns out the minutes ended up being the stat that is most glaring, because when he left the game, it was so weird as to why he was doing so that people were actively wondering. I was getting texts. What's happening here? Is this possibly a strategy of some kind? Is this something that where the Pelicans actually don't want to win this game, as some people recommended, the Lakers not wanting to win this game because they wanted to avoid the Nuggets? Was that a part of it? And in fact, no, it was not a strategy. It was just the most simple Occam's razor of this, which is that Zion Williamson's body cannot be trusted. And I don't know how that is not the lead story of this game. It should be the lead story in some ways of, the promise of a guy who was supposed to be the next great player who ended up being, again, caught on his own treadmill, of course, of the same thing happening over and over.
Bill Barnwell.
It's heartbreaking, not only for the player, but for the fans who have been waiting for this moment for five seasons. Zion Williamson has finally had the year I think everybody hoped he was capable of. He was single-handedly bringing them back in the fourth quarter. The Lakers blew an 11-point lead in 7 minutes with Zion taking over that game. It was tied. It was going to be Zion going over LeBron, finally leading the Pelicans to the promised land. And then in the moment, it snapped. And you saw Zion throw a towel in frustration on the ground. He knew it was over. I think the fans knew it was over. The Lakers, who couldn't hit a shot, shot the lights out from that point forward. It just felt like we were all waiting for this to happen. It was just on the cusp of happening. And then Zion fell off the treadmill.
Yeah, when I was watching him, I was thinking back to when he was drafted. It's kind of hard to remember this, but it's almost like he was Wemby before Wemby insofar as the expectations on Zion, the hype around him, people forget. And Pablo isn't exaggerating when he said this was the greatest game of his career. The most points in the paint he's ever put up. Watching him drive to the hoop at will, this is the player we all know he can be. And unfortunately, also with the injury, the player that we have come to expect. The Pelicans were plus 11 with Zion, minus 8 without him, which doesn't bode well for their playoff future without him. But to the Lakers' credit, you know, they hung in there. And I think it was an unsexy win in some ways, but it was a win that showed a lot about this team. You got production from the role players. Russell was fantastic. They made their free throws, and they didn't turn the ball over.
Jay, can I ask you to focus on the Lakers and then maybe some thoughts on Zion? I think we'd all agree this is a crushing blow for Zion. For the Lakers, it didn't take a LeBron 40-point game. It didn't take a Anthony Davis 40-point game. What did they show you getting out of this play-in?
But it did take them 40 minutes of action on the court. And that's the second time in their last three games both of their two big guys have played 40-plus minutes. So they won, and they got the additional rest by not having to play in the extra play-in game. So the notion that they want to lose and avoid Denver was just nonsensical. This was the desired outcome. You're going to face Denver sooner or later. Might as well get it over with. Might as well have them a little bit fresher as they head into the actual playoffs. LeBron actually looking – his shot chart looking like Zion's for a while – a lot of dots close to the basket. If you looked at the shot chart, his ability to get past and around and through people. LeBron taking two charges, including one from Zion, showing that he's capable and willing to do whatever it takes at this stage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they would have to go through Denver at some point. The idea that they would not want him in the first round or get him in the second or third round is always kind of nonsensical. Thanks for your thoughts on that. Coming back, the news of the day from the NBA off court, and it is not good. The lifetime suspension of an NBA player for gambling on NBA games.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guarantee Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Welcome back to Around the Horn, coming to you from the Heineken River Deck at Pier 17.
And now the news of the day in sports. The NBA's investigation to gambling by player Jontay Porter still ongoing, but in a release today, the league announcing lifetime ban for Porter. Investigation found he bet on NBA games, placed bets against his team, passed on information to other bettors, In a transaction cited in the league release, Porter limited his own participation in a game last month to 3 minutes, saying he felt ill. And the unders for his performance in the game then had suspicious activity that would have cleared over $1 million for one bettor. That bet was frozen and not paid out. And further, Porter placed 13 bets through a workaround account over the first 3 months of this year, a total of over $50,000 on the line in those bets, returning winnings of a net $21,000. And that on three occasions he bet against the Raptors as part of three-team parlays in games he wasn't active. The Raptors went on to win all three of those games. So those were bets Porter lost. Porter sees an end to his NBA playing career after three seasons spent between the Grizzlies, the G League, and the Raptors, for whom he started five games this year. Mina Kimes, what does all this mean for the NBA?
All right. On one hand, this story, coupled, of course, with the Shohei Ohtani story, does, I think, correctly add to a sense of unease around, you know, the proliferation of sports betting and how it impacts sports or might impact sports. On the other hand, I think the betting industry and probably the leagues would say, well, this is an example of a regulated industry working. We caught him. And frankly, for the NBA, it couldn't be an easier story, which is to say it was an incredibly easy decision to punish him, and it was an incredibly stupid example. So I feel like this is only the beginning, but there are going to be harder case studies for the NBA going forward than this one.
But you do see that a check and balance and an investigation and a punishment in here in some way worked for the NBA. Jay, is that how you see it?
Well, Adam Silver, in his statement, acknowledged that, yes, this is some signs that the system is working, but he also said this matter raises issues about the sufficiency of the regulatory framework currently in place. So if Adam Silver has big question marks, we all need big question marks about this going forward. It casts a cloud over everything. Even like Boban missing a free throw to get a free chicken for the Clippers fans, we don't want that precedent of players intentionally missing shots, right? With this Jontay Porter cloud hanging over the league, everything comes into suspicion whether players are giving their best.
Boban chicken was celebrated in a lot of ways, and we all saw the joy in that.
Do we want that precedent? What if you had the over, right? And he misses, like, and a bettor is mad because, like, there's all kinds of issues still in play.
I don't even think it's a what or an if anymore. We know people have the over. The idea that somebody had a line on the unders on the 10th or 11th most important player on a team. And in a game like that is surprising. Pablo Torre, I turn to you now on what type of position the NBA finds itself in.
Yeah, the last description you gave to Jontay Porter is, I think, the most meaningful one here, is that this was a guy who was a G Leaguer, who was in the NBA, had a two-way contract dynamic to his career. So the question you have to ask yourself for the NBA, if you are the NBA, is what are the incentives we are implicitly providing to guys who can make money potentially that is in excess of the contracts that they are being paid as professional basketball players? And so this speaks to the question of who are we allowing to be the subject of parlays, of prop bets, of individual betting actions? And so when Adam Silver is contemplating what needs to change from a regulatory perspective, it's not simply we all look forward to federal legalization of gambling and the trickle down therein. It's okay, do we want to allow guys to bet, people, Americans, to bet on two-way contract players? Do we want to allow it so that there's a temptation and incentive?
Because those players are more vulnerable, you're saying? Because they've only, they're on a smaller salary, and for a player like that,
because they can make lots of money, that's, yes, the cost-benefit, Tony, for those guys can be a lot more reasonable from a financial perspective than it is for a guy who's on a full-time, normal NBA player deal, and that's an issue they have to wrangle with.
Isn't that secondary or tertiary to you? I mean, we still have players we have a league who's very much now embracing betting in some way, as all leagues have, and we've only seen that over the last 5 years, and now we're seeing the consequences of that. I turn to you, Bill Barnwell.
It's a quote from Adam Silver I also wanted to mention. There is nothing more important than protecting the integrity of NBA competition. There is something more important to the NBA than protecting the integrity of their competition, and that's the money they make from gambling. Because if it really was about the integrity of the competition, you would not be allowed to bet on this at sportsbooks. Players would not be allowed to bet whatsoever under any circumstances. Of course, this is how the league works. Of course, they had to ban him permanently. I'm not naive to what's happening around sports and with networks, including ESPN, but this is an acceptable risk for the NBA. I think they're going to say, okay,
there it is.
This is
going
to happen once in a while, and they're going to pay for it.
So that's what I wanted to hear from someone. And maybe I'll open it back up to you, Jay Adande. You know, a Pandora's box some might say, has been opened here. But do you believe the league is saying this is an acceptable risk we're willing to make for everything that comes with it? The monies that come in, the fandom, and the passion that people have for sports and gambling.
But it's interesting that Adam Silver was the first commissioner to really come out in favor of some type of legalized forms of gambling and that the league should accept that. And here he is wondering whether or not they have sufficient measures to protect more scandals from, or to stop more scandals from occurring. That's eye-opening.
Appreciate your thoughts on that. I recognize that's not an easy one to get your whole arms around, and that's not the end of the conversation by any means. I'm sure the NFL, Major League Baseball, WNBA, they're all watching this now and seeing how and how much access players could have to something like that. Thank you for your time, Pablo Torre, Bill Barnwell, Jay Adande. Mina Kimes will be our showdown next.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Madness on the ice last night. Let's talk about this. Red Wings scoring with 5 seconds left to force overtime versus Montreal. They needed to win and get help, but the help they needed didn't come because seconds later in real time, exactly 113 seconds later, Philly pulled their goalie in a tie game because they needed a win and help. However, Detroit's goal had already effectively eliminated Philly, but John Tortorella in Philadelphia didn't know that at the time. So, once again, they pulled a goalie, let up a goal within seconds to Washington. In the end, Pittsburgh wound up being eliminated. Philly wound up losing and being eliminated. And Detroit wound up being eliminated. And Washington goes to the playoffs. Mina, did all this go on the up and up here? Or should have Tortorella and Philly known the score of the game when they decide to make a consequential decision like that?
I mean, for Philly, that's Philadelphia's perspective, who cares? This is only bad for hockey insofar as the Caps probably don't belong in the playoffs. Third worst goal differential of any team to make it since 1990.
Whoa,
as far as Detroit and Pittsburgh goes, win games and don't put yourself in this.
Jay Adande?
Yeah, no problem with Torts trying to win based on what he sees in front of him, not what he's getting on a cell phone or something. There's analytics studies that suggest NHL coaches should be more aggressive in pulling the goalie earlier. Interesting time to test that theory.
Interesting time to do this story. One story after the last story we did, though, right? When goals are in play and the score and the results. We'll give the point to Adande. We'll move in to the play-on. Play-in game. Move on to the play-in game. Hawks, Bulls, Heat, Sixers tonight. You know it.
Play-in, player.
For Miami and Philadelphia, this is a juicy game. Who do you trust more, and what's the number one thing that decides it, Jay?
I trust the Sixers more, especially when they have Embiid in the lineup. We've seen an inconsistent Heat team this season. Even if Embiid isn't at his best, the Heat haven't had to deal with this version of Tyrese Maxey in postseason-type games before.
Yeah. Who do I trust? I trust the process. Coupled with Maxey, they average 60 points per game, which is the most of any duo in the NBA. I don't think the Heat
are. So nobody's buying that Miami's different in the postseason? Or
Heat culture.
Jay Adande, 30 seconds of FaceTime.
Fascinating story on ESPN.com looking at Bill Belichick's lost offseason when he couldn't land a job despite 7 openings. The fascinating thing was suggestions that Robert Kraft ran his boy Arthur Blank off of Belichick, saying you wouldn't enjoy the whole thing. Kraft must be really spiteful because doesn't he want to get off the $25 million he owes Belichick? He'd rather have him wandering the desert than be off the hook for that $25 million?